You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill, and once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour, folks. We're back in the seat here, and after a couple weeks off, and we're in with our friend John Stenberger, who's the president of the Florida Family Policy Council. And John is a great American, and he's the founder, I believe, of On My Honor. John, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, we only got a half an hour because you're a busy guy and you're quite accomplished. We've done the bio the last time around. John, I want to touch on the Boy Scouts, but I also want to talk about some of your other accomplishments, which includes leading the fight to protect marriage in Florida. But first of all, we understand that you have a big announcement with regard to On My Honor, which is your alternative that you founded to the Boy Scouts of America, which went south on the homosexual issue.
Well, the convention where we'll unreveal the name and the logo for the new youth adventure organization that will be the Alternative Boy Scouts will be on September 6th and 7th, and we just confirmed that Mike Huckabee and Mike Ferris will be speaking at the convention, and so we're very excited about that. Many of your listeners know Mike Huckabee. Mike Ferris is the Chancellor of Patrick Henry College and is also founder of the Homeschool Legal Defense Fund.
Yeah, those two guys. Well, that's quite a coup to have those guys speaking. And I'll tell you what, John, I was on your website and just read the letter from the pastor who announced that he will be disaffiliating with the church, of course, his church, which is the Briarwood Presbyterian Church. Is that in Alabama?
That's right, Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah, and it was really something to read the letter. I thought the worst part, I mean, you know, from a moral perspective, is the part of his letter where he said that the phrase morally straight, the famous Boy Scout creed, he said, has been rendered meaningless by the BSA's actions. And that's very sad, of course.
It's extraordinarily sad. I've got Norman Rockwell prints that are Boy Scout prints on my home and office, and it's hard for me to even walk by without weeping. Other than my faith and family, scouting has been an enormous part of my life. And it feels like a part of America has died, Peter. So it's very sad. But here's the good news. Sometimes in life and in history, things have to die before they are resurrected and come back better and stronger.
Absolutely.
And so that's why we're so excited about the new scouting alternative, the Youth Adventure Program, whose name will be launched on September the 6th.
Yeah, that's America. America is launching. You know, you have to just start a whole new project to get the truth out. John?
John, I've talked to a number of people, believe it or not, some even from my own area here. They're Christian men. And for the most part, they're conservative men. And yet they've decided to stay with the Scouts. And I have a hard time looking them in the eye. And they tell me why, and it seems like they're self-justifying their decision. What do you say to people like that that contact you? Because I know you must come into contact with these people that have chosen the doctrine of Lot, and they just are lingering in the Scouts still.
You know, I've done 200 radio interviews, and no one has asked me that question. That's very insightful. First of all, this is an agonizing decision. This is like disassociating with your family for many people, because scouting is such a part of the fiber of so many Americans. But the bottom line is this. We have to be more concerned about truth than we are about tradition. We have to be more concerned about principle than we are institutions. And so while I don't judge those people, I am going to severely judge the decision and what it did. Because what those scoutmasters and people need to understand is that every single unit in the Boy Scouts of America must accept openly gay boys. That is open homosexuality. That is, they have to allow that. So if an openly gay boy, let's say a 16, 17-year-old boy from the local GLAD club high school, for whatever reason, whatever motive he wants to join, he's got to be let in. And that's going to happen. They'll target certain churches and certain units. And if they're not let in, and not only do they allow sexual orientation, but sexual preference, which, Peter, you know, opens the entire door. I mean, a kid can come in wearing high heels and a dress as a boy and cross-dressing, and he's got to be accepted in the troop.
Well, yeah,
that
did you, John, did
so
you mean...
broad and so undefined, it is just crazy.
Right, you have a talking points sheet on your website. It's called The Chart of Differences Between the Boy Scouts and the New and Your Alternative. And this is on onmyhonor.net, folks, onmyhonor.net. But it very clearly lays out the difference, John, and you're absolutely right. Once you start going down, see, the incremental progress of the homosexual movement is, you know, it's very, first you start with sexual orientation, then you just talk about the new vanguard is the gender revolution. And I'll tell you what, folks, it's almost impossible to conceive of how radical it can get. It basically, like John said, it's whatever you want your gender to be. In fact, the more radical end, so-called gender queer people, you know, it's whatever they want to be, whatever given day. In other words, no boundaries at all. And once you start down that road of defining human rights and civil rights based on sexual orientation, then it goes to gender identity, and then it goes to, you know, basically no boundaries. And John, you have established boundaries. In fact, you make clear in this sheet that the standard is the Bible for you guys. It's not anything it's not a secular standard. It's the Bible.
You know, we used to live in a society, Peter, where there was a moral consensus. Even if you didn't quote the scripture, folks' morality came from the scripture. But unfortunately, there's nothing that's self-evident anymore, no self-evident truth. And so we're being very clear about what our standard is, that the scripture is our standard. We're going to allow any boy in the program. There's not going to be a religious requirement. A Buddhist or a Hindu boy and family could put their kid in the program in much the same way as Jewish families put their kids in Christian Catholic schools because they know they're going to get a good education. But all the adults will be Christians. They will sign a statement of faith. We'll have extensive background checks, and there'll be youth protection training for every adult in the program. So we're very excited. We think this is a solid model to launch from. The BSA estimates between 200,000 to 400,000 scouts will leave the program. That does not include adults, chartering partners, and scoutmasters, and donors that will leave as well. So really, we're just providing an alternative. And it's very sad what the BSA has done, but we're here to forge a new day in the scouting movement in America.
Yeah, now I want to do something here. I've got a letter from one of my board members, John McCartney, who's just a great guy. He's in Chicago. He's a longtime activist on this issue and the life issue as well. And you know what? I think what's important is putting things in perspective. We know what the media and the other side does. They try to make it seem like this whole issue is about the so-called rights of young people. They try to make this a civil rights young people for so-called gay scouts. Let me just read a portion of this letter. This is a letter that John McCartney sent regarding so-called reparative therapy and the effort, which is basically reparative therapy is an attempt to change people from a preference towards homosexuality towards normalcy and heterosexuality. And John McCartney here, and John, I want you to hear this. He's responding to somebody who says that this is a terrible thing, that reparative therapy is even allowed for young people, and that this is hurting these people, so-called. And let me quote from the letter. John says, quote, "My question is, why shouldn't someone be helped to do so, that is, to change away from homosexuality, because it is not gay? Half, 532,000, half of the 1.2 million HIV/AIDS victims are men who have sex with men." And that's a category, of course, that the CDC lays out, MSM, men who have sex with men, "as are 61% of new infections." Now listen to this. "With the fastest increase in the 13 to 29 age group, which is the Glee viewers, since 1980, over 300,000 MSM, again, that's men who have sex with men, over 300,000 MSM have died of HIV/AIDS. The extremely costly antiviral drugs now extend MSM lives and potential infectiousness up to 20 years. So the drugs are helping people live longer. Now here's the crux of John's argument. Almost one-third of a million MSM have died of HIV/AIDS. Have there been even 3.5 documented deaths, suicides from reparative therapy? The writer he's writing against, he says the case is against his Sherrard's case. Michael Sherrard is a gay activist. Sherrard's case against it is what Jesus described as straining a gnat, 3.5, and swallowing a camel. His appeal to the authority of the American Psychiatric Association, one would expect, as it has had a pro-homosexual bias since 1973 and has been unfriendly, even hostile to reparative therapy ever since. Now, it's hard to do this over radio, folks, but the issue is we hear a lot of talk about the bullying and the suicides, and these are all tragic issues, and every Christian I've ever met is deeply concerned. We don't want anybody to suffer. We don't want if I learned that my son was abusing a gay kid at high school, he would be severely punished. We have compassion for these kids. We don't want them to go down this road. But where is the compassion for the, and John, I ask you the same question. We have 532,000 men who have had sex with men dead from AIDS. Where is the compassion on this end of the issue?
Well, that's exactly right. There's a massive state of deception that our opponents have created, and through sheer intimidation, mind you, not through intellect and argument and the free exchange of ideas, they've managed to allow all the major institutions of our society to buy into all the assumptions of the gay movement, including and all of that. And so it's a very sad day we live in. But look, all we're called to do is be faithful, and that's all we're attempting to do. We can curse the darkness or just continue to stand firm against it. And so that's what we're called to do, and we're trying to be faithful with this new Boy Scout organization. To answer your question one more time, another reason things Scoutmasters need to look at is the BSA has still not told us how we're going to tent openly gay boys. Boys that announce their attraction to other boys. Mm-hmm. Now, Peter, we would not tent a girl with a boy in scouting.
Exactly.
Why? Well, for the simple reason that they're attracted to each other. But yet, we're proposing now somehow that we're going to tent openly gay boys with other boys. Now, they're going to put them with other gay boys? That's a disaster. Are they going to put them with other heterosexual boys?
So John, let me get this clear. Are they are going to have to, at some point, come out with a policy and say, this is how we are going to tent openly gay boys. They can't just avoid that issue, correct?
I think they may avoid it. They may, because it's a thorny thing. I mean, if they say each gay boy has to be in his own separate tent, can you hear the screams of the
exactly
gay movement? I mean, mm-hmm. separate but equal.
It's like Jim Crow, John. Come on. That's what they're going to say. It's separate but equal.
Right. And so basically the BSA is putting our young men at risk of being physically, sexually, and psychologically damaged if this goes on. And it's stunning to me, one of the highest leaders in scouting, the highest people in scouting, told me directly, this will increase boy-on-boy sexual contact. Mm-hmm. And so it's stunning to me, absolutely stunning, that they know that, and they did this decision anyway.
Now, let me get some clarity on that. You're telling me that in your conversations, because you know some of the higher-ups, including one that lives close to you, they would just tell you, hey, we know this is going to increase predation among boys?
I'm not willing to name names, but I'm going to tell you right now, one of the top leaders of scouting, okay, told me personally before we started our movement, when I was saying, I can't believe you're doing this, he said, well, it is going to increase boy-on-boy. At the time, they were considering allowing Scoutmasters to be in the program as well. And even I was more concerned about the boys than I were the adults, because the boys, you can't regulate boys.
Yeah.
There's a 2D policy in scouting where no two adults can be alone with any boy. So I was not as concerned about the adults as I was always concerned about the boys from day one. And so they know this. And with that duplicity and with that understanding, they went ahead and made this change anyway. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's shocking, and it's I guess it just, you know, it goes with the territory. We see it time and time again, John. You know, once this political correctness can be deadly. If political correctness says that it just doesn't really matter for a boy who openly identifies as being sexually attracted to other males in a close situation with another boy. And you know how boys can be influenced, especially by somebody who's 2-3 years older. In fact, that's a lot of, if you look at the first sexual experience, you study the first sexual experience of a lot of so-called gay men, it's with somebody older, 5, 6, 7 years older, who, you know, call it what you want, seduced, lured in, or just through contact. That's how they got involved in homosexuality. This is really not safe. Now, let me ask you a question. We're coming up to our first break here, but once you get the success going, well, maybe we'll talk about it after the break, from John Stemberger from OnMyHonor.net. after this gets going, will we see a much greater exodus from the Boy Scouts if this new alternative organization succeeds? We're talking to John Stemberger, who's the president of the Florida Family Policy Council and also the founder and CEO of On My Honor, the alternative to the Boy Scouts. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're talking to John Stemberger, who is just an amazing pro-family warrior. John led the successful effort to get a marriage amendment passed in Florida, and he's also founded On My Honor. We're going to get hear the new name, but it's the Alternative to the Boy Scouts of America. John, I was talking before the break about the success building on success. Obviously, if you can get this thing up and it's a viable alternative, and I imagine the media is not going to be helping you in that regard, John, but if you can get that going, do you see this steamrolling and there being a massive exodus from the Boy Scouts?
Well, it's hard for me to make predictions, but yeah, we think that there's going to be a very significant percentage. I mean, the BSA's own estimates are that 2,000 to 400,000 boys will leave. And so we're just providing an alternative program that's morally consistent. The parents can say, you know what, I can trust these men. I can trust their standards. They're clear. They're not wavering. They're not going to change their beliefs based upon polling. And so that's our goal, is to forge with a new birthing a new scouting movement in America.
Now, I can't remember if we asked this last interview, John, but are there other groups that are going to be sort of competing on friendly terms with you as the alternative, or are you guys going to pretty much evolve, do you think, as the main alternative to the BSA?
No, there are many fine programs, the Rural Rangers, Calvinist Cadets, other groups like that, but they are denomination specific. So we'll be the only non-denominational but specifically Christian. So Catholics, Protestants, and Orthodox Christians will be very comfortable with the statement of faith in our program, and that's who we'll be reaching out to. But this is the only movement. All the groups have come together, Trailhead, Faith-Based Boys, Frontier Service Corps, all the groups that were kind of fighting the battle and looking at that, I've all come together under the umbrella of On My Honor, the coalition, and then we'll all be launching a new organization together.
John, how does somebody listening to this program that hears what you're talking about is excited about it? I'm a pastor of a church here in Illinois. How does somebody like me get involved and start a chapter?
Well, the first thing is a very simple thing, but our primary means of communication is email. So folks need to sign up at onmyhonor.net, get our email alerts, because that gives breaking news, all the registration, chartering information. But we need churches, Pastor, because, I mean, the churches will own and operate these organizations. And we're relying upon the churches to choose the leaders and give oversight to help us, in spite of the background checks, in spite of all the child youth protection training we're going to do. We need people that know the character of these men, and to some extent women, that can say, these are the people I trust with kids, and to put them as the leaders in the program.
Yeah, it's very exciting, John. Now, how many do you, I don't want to put you in the position of naming numbers and then the media comes back and says, oh, it's a big failure, but is this gathering that you have coming up on, this is September 6th and 7th in Nashville, Tennessee. This is the debut National Leadership Convention for onmyhonor.net or whatever the final name is going to be called. Is that going to be hundreds? I mean, how big is that going to be?
Yeah, I mean, we have 700 people signed up right now as I'm speaking today. We expect well over 1,000. We're actually on our third hotel. We've blown out the attendance at the hotel. And so we're looking at other facilities now. So it is going to be very excited. Mike Huckabee is going to be speaking, as well as Mike Ferris. And we're going to unroll the program so all the scoutmasters and people that are interested can hear and see each element of the program and give us feedback before we finalize it and launch it in January 1, 2014.
And you said that rank will roll over, right? Boy Scouts,
yes,
that come over to the new organization.
That's right. So if you have a troop right now, first class will transfer over into a rank. Now, it's not going to be an even one-to-one. There'll be a graph and kind of a chart that shows how the transfers will work. Some ranks will need to pick up another couple of new merit badges or something like that. But the point is, we're going to honor and respect the work that the young man has put in the BSA and transfer that work into the new program.
Are you looking for corporate sponsors, or do you feel that would be the that would be the nose under the tent?
Look, one of our corporate sponsors at our dinner is going to be Cornerstone Merchandising Processing.
All right.
Cornerstone, as you know,
we use Cornerstone.
My friend Nick does not deal with pornography or abortion, and so unlike other the major companies. And so, yes, if folks agree with our values, we will allow corporate sponsorships. But really, we're trying to be self-sufficient based upon membership and the growth of that membership. and not be reliant upon major gifts and corporate sponsors.
And John, reiterate the point you made last time we talked, which was one of the downfalls of the BSA was that they put everything centralized. And then, of course, that actually gave greater access to these amoral, I would say, and I'm amoral. They evidently didn't have a strong foundation of morality, these corporate figures who came in and they had the money. And because it was centralized, that made it more easy to be subverted, basically.
That's right. The two mistakes that the BSA made, in my estimation, was number one, the centralized leadership. The professionals took over. They now run the program. They choose the delegates that did this decision. They did not allow each troop to send a delegate. As our organization will have a very decentralized model where each troop will decide, vote on the board of directors even. And so if somebody bad and, you know, a corporate executive who's pro-gay, we put them forth in some future scenario, then the grassroots can rise up and say, no, we don't want this board member.
Excellent. Now, I want to ask you something, John. Have you sensed, what are you hearing from, I know you're not all about, you know, this. You're focusing on your own group. You're not focusing as much on the BSA anymore. But did you hear any regret from, I mean, you had top-level contacts. Was there regret? Were there people saying, oh, no, now we've done it. Look, it's forming. What are you hearing is coming out of the BSA on this?
Well, they're doing damage control right now. They have issued several statements just trying to say, oh, this is what we're about. And their big thing is, oh, we don't condone any sexual activity. Well, they're juxtaposing the simplicity of a young boy saying, I might be gay or I think I'm gay or whatever, or I like other boys, with sexual contact. The problem is, which they have not addressed and which their policy clearly allows, is the flaunting, the kind of coarse jesting, the blunt kind of assertions, and all of the activism, the symbolism, all of the, you know, all that nonsense that goes on that's a part of the modern openly gay experience.
Absolutely.
That kind of flaunting of sexuality and in your face and loud and proud, that attitude is what's going to pervade the programs where they allow openly gay kids in.
John,
and
let
right
me,
now they have no choice.
Yeah, let me talk about that a second. Coming out is a political act. The whole history of the homosexual activist movement, the greatest boon to the movement, the number one thing that has impelled their success has been coming out. That's why they do it. There was a group that used to say, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. That's them talking, not me. That was their phrase. I think that was queer, a group called Queer Nation. I just did a whole paper on the Fox News growing pro-homosexual bias. And one of the surprising things, well, not surprising, I knew it, but the group that they're now endorsing called the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, this group is probably one of the number one factors in the increasing pro-gay media bias in our media. And their number one success thing is just coming out in the newsroom. And what happens is a guy comes out in the newsroom, and then pretty much after that, all the straight guys in the newsroom say, hey, we're doing a story on a homosexual issue. Let's ask John over there. He's gay. He knows it. And so it becomes a power center for that individual. They're moving the coverage more in a pro-homosexual direction by virtue of their personal connection to other journalists. Now, let's take it down to the Boy Scouts. A kid comes out as gay. That is a very radical act for a young person to do, and to imply that there's no effect of that with regard to behavior, with regard to ideology, with regard to the thought process and influences on other boys is absolutely absurd. It's a highly it is an act of advocacy, and it does influence other behavior and thinking among the other boys.
That's right, and I get criticized for saying this in some conservative circles that don't understand this as sophisticatedly as you do, but there's a difference between homosexuality, which has always been with us since the beginning of time, and this new artificial socio-political construct of gay, which is in your face, it's a political agenda, it's a militant attitude, it's a forceful, it's bad. It's bad for democracy, it's bad for our country, it's bad for children, it's a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think the media intentionally downplays that activist angle. But if you go back and study it, this is how the movement grew. And of course, it is an act of advocacy. Once again, we reiterate, all three of us here, John from a long way away in Florida, we love homosexuals. We want people who are struggling with homosexuality to come to come to Jesus Christ, to leave that lifestyle. There is not an ounce of, I don't know John well. I'm getting to know him better, John Stenberg, but I can tell you, this is a compassionate guy. The guy I'm sitting across from, John Kirkwood, Pastor Kirkwood, has a pastor's heart. We want people, we love homosexuals enough to tell them the truth. And so it's a canard to say that there's hate involved here. But John, let me get to the point here of the media. Now, I bet you the line of the media, I would think, with regard to your organization is going to be you're anti-gay. You're the anti-gay scouts, right?
Well, I think, frankly, they're going to ignore us because I think that anything they do now is just going to help us. So other than, you know, gay activist blogs smashing us, I think for the most part, mainstream media is going to ignore us. They covered our initial announcement, actually misrepresented it a bit. But I think predominantly they're going to ignore us because I think any publicity they give us now is going to help us.
Yeah.
So I don't expect a whole lot, and that's fine. So we're just going to move forward targeting friendly media sources like yourself and other folks that understand what we're doing and why it's important.
Right. Now, John, you are the founder, I mean, you're the president of the Florida Policy Council. You also headed up the marriage effort. Let's switch it over to your work on marriage. Tell us, just first of all, tell us about that whole experience. If you could sum it up, what did that mean to you, to your family, to the state of Florida? Can you give us, I mean, that sounds like an exciting time.
You know, I remember a D.C. group meeting that I attended with Phil Burris and several others years ago at First Presbyterian Church in Orlando, Florida. And it was my first exposure to the movement. This was probably 15 years ago. And I just remember being in that room and hearing the discussion, and my eyes was being opened. My mind was just processing all this. And my ignorance was dropping at a rapid rate. And I knew that I was supposed to do something in Florida. And there's very few times the scouting movement is one of those times, but very few times where I felt like the total culmination of all of my legal training, the radio that I've done, the media, the debate, analysis on statutes and the lobbying, the politics and the campaigns and the designing of things all came together and prepared me to lead the marriage amendment in 2008 here in Florida, which allowed 62% of Floridians to define marriage as a union of one man and one woman.
62% it passed by. Okay.
Yep.
And were you, was it just by virtue of your experience? I mean, was it a coalition effort? Describe, the nuts and bolts of it quickly.
Absolutely. I mean, I was the primary leader, but we could have not done it without the pastors in Florida. That the church stood up, and really the church is the final battleground. I say this to pastors all over the country. If the church folds, it is done. We have got to preserve the integrity and the truth of Scripture, and we've got to envision pastors to see themselves as not just guardians of their own flock or guardians of the institution of the family. They must see themselves as the guardians of the culture. And if they do not, there's no way we can continue to fight this battle. If the church folds, it's over, Peter. And so I am very passionate talking to pastors about their duty before God and to civilization itself, to make sure that they're teaching and preaching and teaching a worldview, a Christian worldview, as they're teaching from the Scripture, and not avoiding life, marriage, and family just because they're, quote, political, and the left has defined them as political entities.
Yeah.
So we, the Baptists, the Catholics, were very critical. And without those two groups of people, we could have never passed the amendment in Florida.
Yeah, I don't think we could reiterate enough what you just said. The church, quote, must see themselves as the guardians of the culture.
Yeah, even in the, I use the word enemies with accommodation, but even in the enemy's playbook in After the Ball, they mentioned targeting the church, targeting the culture, the courts, and they've won everywhere. They've won everywhere, and including a lot of churches. Pete, you saw the latest Pride Parade, and there were a ton of churches carrying signs there. Now, I understand there's a huge continuum, and I'm glad to hear the report from Florida. But just as we speak today, a California committee approved legislation that would revoke tax-exempt status from any nonprofit organization that does not embrace homosexuality. So we are going to see a winnowing in the American church, and we're going to see a divide probably similar to what happened in Germany with the Confessing Church and the Reich Church.
I think that's right. And what's happening now, Peter, is that there's a movement to now undo these marriage amendments throughout the country. In Arizona and Florida, it's being chaired by the former governor of New Mexico, Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson.
Oh, boy.
And it's the exact same movement. It's called Equal Marriage Florida and Equal Marriage Arizona. And so it's the exact same website, exact same chairman, being heavily funded by someone. What's fascinating, and this has never been talked about publicly before, is that the gay activists in our respective states rejected that movement. And they actually launched those campaigns without even coordinating with the local activists on the ground. So there is an enormous rift.
Hold off right there, John. Hold off right there. We'll come back right after the break with our friend John Stenberger from the Florida Family Policy Council. We'll be right back.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, folks. We're with our friend John Stenberger from Florida Family Policy Council. I forgot to mention that I'm here in the studio with the great John Kirkwood, who's a Clash Daily columnist, and he's also a pastor at Grace Gospel Fellowship Church in Bensonville, Illinois. John Stenberger, you were just about to talk about how are you telling me basically that the gay activists are getting so cocky that some renegade activists on the other side are just sort of launching these efforts and they're sort of losing this top-down collusion? Is that what's happening?
Well, what's happening is they're completely rebranding these pro-gay marriage amendments that they're trying to pass to amend our marriage amendments, which were the good amendments. And so they're trying to, I think, bypass the normal medical gay activist structure on the ground, and they're making it look like a libertarian movement, like this is conservative, this is about freedom. I mean, their video, they have two wedding rings opened up to the book of Revelation, right where it says the marriage supper of the Lamb, and they've got churches, and they say this is about freedom, and it's about marriage, and about religious freedom, and freedom to marry, and so they're making it look very mainstream, you know, very, very, very slick marketing. No gay people at all in these ads. These look like white Anglo-Saxon Target commercial people, you know. I mean, it's like they're very serene in the way they've done this, very slick. And I think, and what's happened in both in Arizona and in Florida is the Equality Arizona and Equality Florida, they said, we don't want this. We've rejected it. So there's actually a rift between the big money gay activists that are trying to come in with this new plan to bypass the gay activist network and actually just promote it themselves as kind of a libertarian movement with Gary Johnson being the chairman.
Interesting. And the libertarians in my Fox report, which, by the way, folks, is available at America's Survival, USASurvival.org. The group is America's Survival by Cliff Kincaid. The report is called Unfair, Unbalanced, and Afraid, Fox News Growing Pro-Homosexual Bias and the National Journalism Center, National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association. It's also going to be available at AmericansForTruth.org. It'll be up today. But, John, libertarians, the greatest growth segment in Fox is all these libertarians. And unfortunately, a lot of these people are just kind of incompetent in talking about social conservatism, including the fight against the homosexual marriage issue and such. And so the libertarians, they evidently see this as a way to grow their movement.
Well, I call them libertarians, to be frank with you, because there's not much conservative about them. Private behavior has public consequences. That's what I would say to every single libertarian. They need to think about that, you know, John Locke's paradigm about doing what you want with your life, liberty, and property unless it infringes upon the life, liberty, and property of another. That's a great paradigm, but impact does not have to be direct. There's many things that are indirect. We see this with gambling. We see this with the proliferation of drugs. Just because someone's doing something to the privacy of their home does not mean it's going to not have wider effects upon the economy, upon their family, upon the community, upon crime, upon education, and all the other institutions of society. So there's a real theoretical la-la land thinking in libertarian thought, where they act as if people can just behave privately and it's not going to have an impact on the community, and that's just wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let me go back to the letter from John McCartney. 532,000 of the 1.2 million HIV/AIDS victims were men who had sex with men. Okay, John, but before we run out of time here, I've got a question. I ask you this question. We saw the Supreme Court decisions on both DOMA and Prop 8. It seems to me the homosexual activists are very confident that they are now going to set up the court cases across the country, which will force even states like yours in Florida and other states that have marriage amendments protecting marriage as between one man and one woman. They're counting on the Supreme Court to strike that down. And combine that with California, where they now liberals know that all they have to do is not enforce or defend these marriage laws. Where do you see all this going?
Well, I think the big picture, Peter, where the court's going, I think we're going to see they're going to split the cultural war baby in half. I think you're going to see them basically come down. I think eventually perhaps even overturn Roe versus Wade, maybe even in our lifetime. I think they're going to go pro-life on the life issue, but I think they're going to go pro-gay on gay rights. I think they're doing that for a number of reasons. One is they're following cultural trends instead of just following the law, which is not what a judge should be doing. But Justice Kennedy, who's the swing vote, I mean, his last major abortion decision, he was talking in very pro-life terms. I mean, he was talking about the humanity of the unborn child, and I was really stunned at how, and struck at how he was using pro-life terminology. But yet, in the latest DOMA decision and Prop 8 decisions, oh my goodness, he was just
using gay activist terminology. I mean, he's talking about this incredible suffering of children in homosexual households. It was unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. So I think the court, in order to avoid institutional illegitimacy and rebuff by the wider culture, I think they're just following culture. And I think that one of the reasons they didn't make a sweeping decision, some of them may have wanted to, but they just don't want to be viewed as an illegitimate institution of society. But I think they're waiting to follow the culture in hopes that the culture will change and then they'll change with the culture. That's a sad analysis, but I think that's what's going on. I think it's wrong. I think they need to be looking at the law and the Constitution and interpreting it. But unfortunately, they're just being social change agents and really lacking the kind of moral fortitude. And I'm not saying the entire court, obviously, but several of the more liberal justices, this is the way they're thinking.
Well, that I don't like that triangulation, and I'm seeing it all over the place. In fact, I think we even saw the National Right to Life Committee.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What did they do, John? The National Right to Life said it will not follow the groups that are trying to unseat, what's the senator from Ohio who had the gay son? They're not going to be part of the efforts to unseat Senator Portman,
yeah,
because Senator Portman has a pro-life record. And so, John, one of the burdens I've had is we've got to reach these pro-lifers and say, look, all of these issues are the same. The culture of death and disease applies to the homosexual issue as well as the life issue, obviously.
That's right. Exactly right.
But, John, okay, the obvious question is, can this be stopped? Can the gay marriage train that the Supreme Court has just given a lot of fuel to, can that be stopped? Or are we doomed because of Kennedy's, the bias that's in the court? I mean, what's going to happen when these court cases, like some guy says, I was married in Massachusetts, now I moved to Texas, and I'm such a victim because my marriage isn't honored here. What's going to happen there?
You know, Peter, this is a great and profound question, and I don't think we can sit here and play God in terms of predicting.
Right.
My cry to every American, my cry to every pastor and every citizen of this great land is we need to be faithful. We need to fight the fight. If we're the last person on the face of the earth that believes that God's design for marriage is between one man and one woman, I will die with my last dying breath. I'll be the last guy fighting. Every person, every citizen should have that kind of viewpoint, irrespective of what the culture says, Fox News, irrespective of the commercials, the polling data. We need to be faithful and stand up for what's right if we're the last person on the face of the earth that's advocating.
Amen. Amen. And obviously, there's always hope. I mean, I will never forget somebody telling me the story of Bowers v. Hardwick. They thought that decision was going to go the other way. I'm talking the pro-family Christians. And then almost miraculously, Bowers v. Hardwick, which was the first sodomy case, went our way. But John, and we never want to discourage anybody. We have got to stand for the truth. But it is very troubling what I think was a profound point that you made, which is basically that the court knows the country's evolving pro-life, but at the same time evolving pro-homosexual. It's an amazing development, but it shows you that politics matters. Getting involved with the culture matters, because this movement, this homosexual movement, has been working incredibly hard for very long, and now they've reached the point where they have, I would say, conned the culture. I think it's one of the biggest cultural cons in America. They sold a sexual perversion as a civil right. It's startling, and especially when you look back and you see, I mean, I've been reading gay history, John. Do you know how back in the 70s after Stonewall, do you know how basically the homosexual movement moved forward?
No.
They basically, it was thuggery. They would take some guy, some liberal politician who was not pro-gay yet, who did not meet all their demands, and they would basically confront him on the street and start yelling at him. And they did this to Mayor Lindsay in New York City. They said, you know, what about the homosexuals? They'd get in his face at when he was on a campaign stop or getting out of his limo. So basically, the movement moved forward by thuggery, the same movement that now cries about bullying. Yep. They bullied their way into power, but now unfortunately the forces arrayed against the gay activist movement have precious little power compared to the pro-life movement, and so we really have our work cut out for us.
Well, I think here's the problem in a nutshell. The person that has the better story in our day and age of postmodernism and media wins. And so the pro-life issue, you know, the ultrasound, the stark reality of what's in the womb, that's an undeniable, powerful effect. And you can see the direct impact to a child when it's killed. The problem is, in the marriage issue, it's more accentuated. In other words, you don't see the direct impact. Oh, yeah. What's wrong with me marrying my partner? They don't understand the disintegration of the culture, the devaluing of the institution. I mean, look at Barack Obama. When he did what he did on gay marriage, that influenced millions of people.
Yeah.
It really did influence people, because law is a tutor, it's a taskmaster. The Bible says that, it teaches us. And the people that grew up prior to Roe versus Wade have a very different view of abortion than the people that grew up right after Roe versus Wade. That's because people follow the law. The law shapes our thoughts and opinions and views on things. And so it's a very important force, and why people need to understand that culture kind of, in some respects, follows the law and follows politics.
Also, John, media, you know, the media, the stories. I mean, I think one of the most compelling stories on our side are the former homosexuals. It's amazing. People like Charlene Cothran and Stephen Black and all these wonderful stories, but the media will not tell those stories, and the gay activists, the pressure, the media, incredible pressure, not to let these people get on the air.
And that's why there's so much hostility toward those people. First of all, to deny that they exist, and then to actually attack them. You saw the former homosexual singer disinvited from the D.C. event.
McClurkin,
McClurkin. I mean, so you're right. We have to put a face to the voice on that.
And I think we have to give folks, and John, I want you to comment on this. I think we've got to find a way to give a face to the reality of the health risks that go along with homosexual behavior. Once again, 532,000 of the 1.2 million HIV/AIDS cases linked to homosexual practicing men. That is a story, but of course the media wants to bury that.
Well, that's right. Anybody that discusses the statistical pathology within the homosexual, you know, group and population is immediately shut down in our culture. And between, I think, the two greatest influences of our young people are public schools and, as you just said, the media. They're just powerful forces. And so this is the battle we live in. I am excited. I think God is still doing things in the earth. I think that what's going to happen here is we're going to see the pendulum swing so far so quickly, you're going to see a rebuff, as many other things in our culture.
Well, the great thing about you,
I think eventually Joe, average pro-gay person, is going to wake up and say, wait a second, this is just really crazy now.
Yeah.
This is not what I signed up for.
You know? Well, you're in an exciting position because you've got On My Honor. And I mean, you are, and others like you, and I commend you so much for this. You are giving an alternate version to young people. The BSA has chosen its course. They went with the world. You know, we're Christians. We know what it is. You can go with the world or you can go with God. And I have great respect for men and women who stick with God regardless of the political correctness. And John, God has put you in this position now with this On My Honor to have an incredible influence over young people on these and other issues.
Well, I appreciate that, Peter. Appreciate your support. Folks can check us out at onmyhonor.net. The new Christian alternative to the Boy Scout movement. We're forging a new path in the history of scouting in America.
Yes, folks, and let's once again give that. Now, you can get your church involved. The biggest thing John says to do is go to onmyhonor.net, sign up for the emails. I'm getting them. They're excellent. There's an excellent one that just came out a couple weeks ago, I think, on the difference between the Boy Scouts and onmyhonor.net. Check it out. Go to the website. Sign up. Get your church involved. Force the decision, folks. I mean, come on. You got to make the case. Yeah, there will be people who will be lazy or apathetic or they won't think it through, but we all have influence in our spheres where we live. John Stenberger, John, give us one more word. Again, why should people get involved with onmyhonor.net? We got 30 seconds.
Well, basically, the BSA is going to allow openly gay boys to tent with other boys somehow. They have not announced a policy, and it creates a risk for young people, and it's just a bad example. So, we really hate to even talk about the BSA. We want to talk about how great our group is. Mm-hmm. So folks can go to onmyhonor.net. This is a program that's going to have moral consistency, and parents can trust the leadership and what it stands for.
John, how important is it for pastors who are going to have a charter of this new association? How important is it for them to be there at the announcement and at that convention?
Well, I think if they at least sent a representative, that would be helpful. The pastor himself does not need to be there, but a person that has a high interest in doing this or has, you know, been involved with their scouting program, if they had one, those are the kind of folks we need to be there.
Does it cost anything, John?
Yeah, there is a cost. I mean, it's a day and a half, you know, event with meals and program and all that. So you can go online and determine there's different costs there depending on the level that you choose. So,
okay, well, listen, yeah, we commend you for your work, John. Thank you so much. People, go to onmyhonor.net. And thanks, John, for all you've done for the kingdom and for the good cause.
Thank you kindly, Peter.
God bless.